from the Reno Media Group.
KBZZ Sparks Reno.
96.1 and 1270. Northern Nevada's home of the San Francisco 49ers. Plus Tiki Barber, Boomer Esiason, Jim Rome, Panama, and more.
CBS Sports Radio.
Oh, it's going to be a great day. CBS Sports Radio in Reno, 96.1 FM, 1270 AM worldwide, renosportsradio.com. It's a sports buffet notch. How you doing this morning? 775-823-1920. Love to talk to you today. Roger Goodell wants to eliminate the extra point in football. He wants to revolutionize football. You know how some people just make changes simply for the sake of making changes? Never works out well. I'm going to discuss that here in a little bit. I have the actual fix for the extra point in football. If he's got to make sure that it's not too easy. Because God forbid we see people succeed at things in sports. That would just be the worst thing ever, wouldn't it? Also, Masahiro Tanaka, the big free agent pitcher from Japan, narrowing down his choices. He's got to make a decision by Friday. I'm going to talk about his options coming up a little bit later on in the hour, and I'll tell you where I think he's going to go. Once again, 823-1920, if you want to chime in. Can't believe none of the Bay Area teams have gone after Tanaka. They didn't put any bids in. I wish the Bay Area had an American League team. That would be that'd be pretty cool, actually. The Bay Area, though, last night, tough loss in Oakland for Golden State. They lost at home to Indiana. I said they were going to win yesterday when I was on Panama's show. Love to stay up late to watch myself be wrong. It's unbelievable. 102-94, the game got close at some points. The Pacers had a big lead after the first quarter. Golden State trying to play catch up the rest of the way. They only shot 40% from the floor. They shot below their season averages in 3 points and field goals. They got out-rebounded by the Pacers. Other than that, they played a great game. Steph Curry, 3-for-11 from 3-point. They're a jump shooting team. They're a young jump shooting team that you're going to live and die by the jump shot. Klay Thompson actually shot pretty decent. He only had 17 points, though. You got to have more than 41 total points out of Curry and Thompson. Bogut and Lee got in foul trouble. You can't say it's Indiana's defense when the Warriors are missing foul shots because there's not a hand in your face on the foul shots. Looking at the box score, Draymond Green had a heck of a game. 1-for-7 from the field, minus 12 on the plus-minus. He did have 6 boards, though. 0-for-2 from 3. Mark Jackson, you think he'd know Indiana well enough. Well, because he used to play for him, but this is a totally different Indiana team than what he's used to playing for. God, I hope Indiana beats the Heat in the playoffs. Games like this really for Indiana don't matter. It's just more a point of staying healthy. It's more like preseason for teams like the Pacers. The team to watch out for in the Eastern Conference right now, though, I've been saying this all year. I thought before the season they were going to be a big team. And even when they were slumping, I said they're going to come around. Well, they're starting to come around. The Brooklyn Nets. They blew out the Knicks yesterday. They're the better New York team. They're overpaid guys are so much better than New York's overpaid guys. They're 17-22 now, the Nets. Jason Kidd's finally getting a hang of this coaching thing. Kind of like I'm getting a hang of the sports radio thing. But 17-22 in a weak conference. 17-25 actually makes the playoffs in the Eastern Conference. But the Atlantic Division's really weak, too. 17-22. They're just a game or two out in the Atlantic. There's no way Toronto's going to win that division. No way. But Brooklyn, I can totally see them getting the 3 seed. First team to 40 wins in the Atlantic Division gets the 3 seed. And that means unless Miami decides they want to actually play games in the regular season, it means they're going to play the Heat in the second round. I'm already looking ahead to the second round of the Eastern Conference playoffs. So either Indiana or Brooklyn, somebody evict the Miami Heat from the playoffs. Please just do that for me, all right? I might start watching the NBA more if they do that. By the way, Heat Lakers on TV Thursday night. I'm not going to watch that game. I'm sorry. The Heat Lakers Basketball Association, I'm not going to watch that. If Kobe Bryant were playing, that'd be one thing. But why are you putting the Lakers on national TV without Kobe Bryant? Pau Gasol can't carry a team. Great player. I love Pau Gasol. Love his game. But Pau Gasol is not the kind of player you build national TV broadcasts around. They had the Indiana Golden State game on ESPN last night. Have good teams on, not just the marquee teams. And when I say marquee, I mean the name, the A-listers. Not necessarily how the standings are based, but there's more than just a handful of teams in the NBA. Show the Grizz more. Show the Blazers more. You don't need to show the Clippers more. I like the Clippers. They're taking over LA right now. They have they're a mentally weak team, but they're fun to watch. Show more games like Indiana Golden State. That was a good game. It got good at the end, but Indiana's a really good team. I just hope they stay healthy. Either them or Brooklyn has to take out Miami. Richard Sherman's in the news. We're still talking about Richard Sherman, the media-savvy genius cornerback of the Seattle Seahawks. I'm giving him his props now. We should all give him his props now. The reason why we should do that is because he can't keep this up for two whole weeks. Richard Sherman has to fizzle out at some point by this weekend, or he's really, really going to run the risk of becoming the most unlikable player in the National Football League. And he's actually not a bad player. He's not a bad guy, but okay, we get it. Crabtree started stuff with you in Arizona. God, get over it, dude. Come on, you know? I mean, you don't have to start stuff every time the guy's name comes up. He had an apology yesterday. Because of his media savviness, he also wrote, he was the guest writer on Peter King's Monday Morning Quarterback column for Sports Illustrated's website. They have a magazine also. Do you know that? That's sportsillustrated.com, si.com. They have a magazine also. They have some softcore porn that they have, and occasionally they have a sports feature in Sports Illustrated. You should actually check it out at newsstands. They have these things called newsstands. I know there's the internet now, but they have these things called newsstands where they have these glossy, they're not books. They're like little mini books. They're glossy mini books that come out every week or every month. They're called magazines. I know it's old school to think of magazines now with the internet. I don't actually read newspapers or magazines anymore myself. But it's nice to know they're still putting those out. Just improve your internet product. Embrace the future. But I still like Sports Illustrated. Richard Sherman's apology, though, it was one of those apologies. You know how you're like in a bad relationship, a bad marriage, and it's not, I'm sorry, it's I'm sorry I ever met you, or it's I'm sorry you're such a dirtbag. It was that kind of apology from Richard Sherman. He didn't actually apologize for the comments he made. He apologized to his teammates for making the focus of the Seahawks' victory his beef with Richard, with a Michael Crabtree. That was the apology. It's a non-apology apology. It's kind of like when you're in school. You remember when you're growing up in school? Hopefully you're not listening while you're in school. Actually, that'd be impressive if you were. I used to listen to the radio when I was in class, which should tell you something. But you remember when you were in school and you had a fight with a kid and the teacher, of course, would break it up and then they'd say, okay, shake hands and apologize. The forced apology is the most insincere apology that there is in existence. If somebody has to tell you to apologize, then it's not a real apology. If you feel like you're being forced to apologize, oh, sure, it's just words. Oh, I'm sorry. Richard Sherman, he was sincere, though. I believe he was truly sincere when he apologized to his teammates. I'm sorry that Michael Crabtree is such a dork that I had to spend my whole post-game ritual talking about him instead of focusing on how good our team is. That was a sincere apology. It may have been forced a little bit. Pete Carroll talked to Richard Sherman because the coach always has to talk to the player, rein him in, especially when they're having trouble on social media, like on Twitter. I'm on Twitter quite a bit, and I see stuff. on Twitter. If you're not on Twitter, you're really missing out because it's real-time commentary from people. You can get breaking news on things. I recommend it. The Reno Sports Media, Reno Sports Radio, at Reno Sports Radio is the CBS Sports Radio Reno Twitter feed. You should follow it, by the way. It's really cool. By the way, speaking of apologies, there are no apologies coming from, well, the NHL is apologizing for this, which happened Saturday night.
Now, BX is going to face off against Westgaard, so the defenseman moves up for the Canucks.
Tortorella at the Vancouver bench is already looking at the
Calgary
bench.
Line brawl to start this game. Westgaard and BX are separated. Sestito and McGrattan back at the blue line. Torts is angry.
Is he ever? He's looking directly at the Calgary Flames bench.
So we got two fights going on. Kevin VX is now with Schmid on the near boards, and it's Westgaard and Lane near the Vancouver blue line. Will Sestito and McGrattan go at it near the Calgary blue line? Welcome to the NHL, Kellen Lane.
Yeah, welcome to the NHL, because you have to have fighting in hockey, right? I mean, that's what the sport's all about. It's boxing on skates where occasionally you try to score a goal. Isn't that what hockey is? It's actually not what hockey is. But that was Saturday night in Vancouver. Hockey night in Canada. Calgary at Vancouver. For some reason, the Calgary Flames coach, Bob Hartley, who's won Stanley Cups before, he sent his fourth line. That's the tough guy line. The fourth line, the first line, which you normally start the game with, are the skilled players. Let me make that clear. They're the skilled players. The fourth line are the grinders, the gritty guys, the enforcers, the checkers. Not like the game checkers, where they rough people up. So he put his goons out there to start the game. So John Tortorella, who... he's a rather intense guy. He's not Richard Sherman intense.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get. Don't you ever talk about me.
Who was talking about you?
John Tortorella isn't Richard Sherman intense, but he's still pretty intense. So what he did was he reciprocated. He sent his tough guy line out. And there was fake toughness everywhere. And, of course, you heard the clip where they drop the puck and everyone on the ice starts going at it. It's like the Slapshot movie all over again with Ogie Oglethorpe out there. And they gave the fans what they wanted to see. They gave them the NASCAR crash, because that's the exciting part about NASCAR is the crashes. The exciting part about hockey is the fighting. And then after the circus was over, after the sideshow was over, they played hockey pretty much for the remaining 59 minutes and 52 seconds of the game. It did get interesting, though, between the first and second periods, because Tortorella tried to confront the Flames, not just the coach, but the entire team in the locker room area. And that's what the NHL is apologizing for. They're not apologizing for the line brawl. I guess that's okay, because Hartley, who started the whole thing by putting his goons out... You see, in hockey, if you're not familiar with the rule, the home team puts their guys on the ice last. The road team has to put their guys on the ice during a shift change when they make substitutions. The road team puts their guys on the ice first, and then the home team has the advantage. They can put their guys on the ice afterwards. So Hartley started it by putting his goon squad out there to start the game. He got fined $25,000 by the NHL. What Tortorella did was so much worse, apparently, because he got suspended for 15 days, which is the equivalent of 6 games. That's why I'm really looking forward to the Winter Olympics. Some of the sports, you know, they're not the kind of things you normally watch, but the hockey, it's going to be like an NHL All-Star Tournament. It's going to be an unbelievable display. Canada is so deep, they could field two whole teams. So you have Team Canada, you have USA, who looks pretty good. Sweden and Finland look really good. Russia looks really good. The Czech Republic is kind of eh. But unlike basketball, where you have the dream team, the USA, and then you have like Spain and Argentina that are a couple of outliers, then you have a bunch of other teams that are just filler, basically. I mean, you have a tournament here in hockey with at least five quality countries that can win. And international rules are a lot different than the National Hockey League. They have the International Ice Hockey Federation has different rules than the NHL. The NHL is like the only pro sports league, pro hockey league that doesn't follow international hockey rules. Because fighting is prohibited in the Olympics. Let me rephrase that. Let me correct myself. Fighting itself isn't prohibited. You can fight, but you fight once, and then you're done for the game. There's no 5 minutes. You fight and you're out. So you're going to see skilled hockey. You're not going to see the crap you saw Saturday night. If you look at the highlights on ESPN, it's one of the few times ESPN actually shows hockey highlights is when they have stupid line brawls that make the whole sport look stupid. They used to really have good hockey coverage, ESPN. But now it's Tebow, LeBron, Johnny Manziel, NFC East. There's so many other options out there for sports. And thank you for choosing CBS Sports Radio in Reno as one of your options, by the way. I'm looking forward to the Olympics. And like I made the NASCAR comparison earlier. I'm not a big NASCAR guy. Not because of the crashes. The crashes don't turn me off. What turns me off is the cars are just going around in a circle. That's what turns me off. I don't know why more people don't like hockey. Is it because of the fighting? Because supposedly people like the fighting, but it is a sideshow. It's actually a really skilled sport. If you love speed and if you love intensity, and if there's a lot of legal hitting in hockey too. Actually, they did a survey where the average hockey player, when he delivers a hit on another hockey player, it's 17 times more vicious, more violent. There's 17% more impact on the hit than there is during your average NFL hit, even though the average NHL player is 20% smaller than the average NFL player. So if you love speed and you love hitting and you love action, it's not like football where they run a play and then you have 30 seconds of replays and huddles and stuff. Hockey is pretty nonstop. If you're watching an overtime NHL playoff game where it's sudden death, you have to be on the edge of your seat pretty much the entire time. You can't get up because the game could be over like that. It's if you don't watch hockey, you really should start. It's a great sport. It's my second favorite sport actually behind football. And they're talking about Hard Knocks again. The HBO does a really good job with their documentaries. They have Hard Knocks and they also have the 24/7 documentaries. They had an excellent 24/7 documentary about the Winter Classic, the outdoor game on New Year's Day. And I could give a dozen craps about the Red Wings or the Maple Leafs, but I still watched every second of the 24/7 Road to the Winter Classic documentary. The way they get inside, because that's the one thing that they can give you that you can't get anywhere else. You get the access, the insider access, because everybody, when I was growing up, I dreamed of being a quarterback, which obviously didn't happen. But the fact everybody wants to be, at some point, they dream of being inside. They dream of knowing somebody or being that somebody involved in music or TV or sports. Sometimes it's more than one. You have musicians that want to be athletes. You have athletes that want to be musicians. They all want to be actors. It's the inside access. It's unbelievable. And the Hard Knocks series, I can't believe that you hear about distractions all the time, which is ridiculous from NFL teams. I don't know why they're so worried about distractions. Everything could be considered a distraction, technically. But the NFL is trying to find volunteers. Remember in school, back to the school analogies, it all comes back to when we were kids. The most I ever learned was in kindergarten. You ever heard that saying? But you know how the teacher would be like, okay, I need a volunteer. If I don't get any volunteers, I'm going to start picking names. You remember that? The kids would get the cold sweats. They don't want to volunteer, but they're also trying to just, you know how you shrivel your neck down? You shrivel your head down into you, try to push your neck down, your head down into your shoulders so they can't see you so you won't get picked. That's what NFL teams are doing right now when it comes to Hard Knocks. I'm not going to say the NFL is going to try to force somebody to do it next year, because you can't really force them to do it. But they're going to incentivize. Is that the right word? They're going to give incentives to do it. Let's try that. Incentivize. That's the word. They're going to incentivize, I think, somebody to do Hard Knocks this year. And I would love it if my favorite team, the Vikings, would do Hard Knocks. That would be like porn for me if the Vikings were on Hard Knocks. They haven't been. They won't be this year because the NFL has set criteria for a team to appear on the Hard Knocks show. There's three criteria that disqualifies you from consideration for Hard Knocks. If you have a new head coach, you can't be on the show. If you've been to the playoffs at least once in the last 2 years, you can't be on the show. But the irony is, if you haven't been to the playoffs at least once in the last 2 years, you probably have a new coach anyway. But then again, some teams went to the playoffs last year and they have a new coach. But also, if you've been featured on the show before, you are exempt. So no Bengals again this year. It would be riveting to see how Marvin Lewis adapts to having totally new coordinators this year, because both of his coordinators got taken by other teams for head coaching jobs. The following teams are eligible to be on Hard Knocks this year. This is the list of potential volunteers, potential involuntary volunteers. The Chicago Bears, the Buffalo Bills, the Arizona Cardinals, the Jacksonville Jaguars, the St. Louis Rams, and three teams that I think would be the best for it. The Pittsburgh Steelers. Mike Tomlin would actually be pretty good with that. He'd probably do some sideline special teams hijinks during practice when they're practicing punt returns. The Oakland Raiders. A lot of Raider fans here in Northern Nevada. Would you like to see the Raiders on Hard Knocks? If I were a Raider fan, I'd love it. As a fan of a team that isn't the Raiders, I don't know if Dennis Allen and Matt McGloin and Darren McFadden and Charles Woodson, I'm trying to think of players on their defense. I don't know if that group of people inspires me. I don't know if Al Davis's kid roaming around inspires me to watch insider access to the Oakland Raiders. But there's a lot of Raider fans, so it would be good, at least for the Hard Knocks franchise. The team that I think should get it, of all these teams on the list, the team that I would really like to see the most, I think it would be totally riveting reality television programming. And, you know, sports is the best reality TV in existence. Remember that. The New York Giants. The New York Football Giants. You have to say the New York Football Giants, even though the New York Baseball Giants moved to San Francisco in the 50s. Tom Coughlin, Eli Manning, having them up in Albany, New York, at training camp, following those two guys around. I would love to see that. Of course, it's all about the Mannings. The fact that a Manning's on this list, I think pretty much shortens the list in and of itself, don't you think? But it'll be fun to see. Roger Goodell's got a major decision. Actually, it's not a hard decision. Go with the Giants. If you can have a Manning on Hard Knocks, you got to go for it. Roger Goodell, he's got other stuff on his plate right now. Of course, the cold weather Super Bowl. And he was on NFL Network with Rich Eisen talking about the extra point and how it's too easy. And we can't have anything that's easy. We can't have success in this league. So he wants to eliminate the extra point as we know it. I think, I'm going to let you know what I think coming up here in just minutes at CBS Sports Radio.
Northern Nevada's new home for sports, 96.1 and 1270.
CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back at CBS Sports Radio. Notch Sports Buffet, 823-1920. Got to see the Giants in Hard Knocks this year. Get on that, peeps. Unless you're a Raiders fan, then you'll probably want to see the Raiders. It's no contest. Got to have a Manning in the Hard Knocks franchise. It's all about the Mannings. That's why Richard Sherman's on his butthead tour right now. It won't last. Savor it while it's going on. Roger Goodell, he's 1 for 2 in bright ideas this month. The 7-team playoff idea. I love the 7-team playoff idea. Here's why. There's 3 reasons why I love this idea. 1, if you have the 1 seed, if you have the best record in conference, not only do you get home field advantage for the entire playoffs, you're the only team in the conference that gets a bye. So that's a good thing. The second thing is you have triple headers Saturday and Sunday during the wild card weekend. Not double headers, triple headers. And we've seen already, if you look at Thanksgiving Day, the greatest holiday on the calendar, they went from a doubleheader of NFL action to a tripleheader of NFL action. And I have yet to hear one person say, there's too much football on today, on Thanksgiving Day. This is too much football for me. I can't handle all this football. Why'd you have to have a third game? I have yet to hear one person say that. And this includes people that don't even like football. Because on Thanksgiving Day, you're sick of your family by halftime of the Lions game. And the fact that there's a third game on, which means the football fans will stay away from you even longer. So even the non-football fans enjoy the fact there's a triple header on Thanksgiving Day. So a 7-team playoff format in each conference would mean you'd have a triple header in the first round. You'd have 2 versus 7, and then like it is now, 3-6 and 4-5. If the 7-team playoff format were in place this year, the way it would shake out would be Arizona would play Carolina. That would be the additional playoff game in the NFC, which that's not too shabby of a game. In the AFC, it would be Baltimore at New England. Not too shabby of a game. There's no downside here. And of course, the third reason that I like it is another team makes the playoffs. You look at the cutoff point between 6 and 7, it's not really that different than the cutoff point between 7 and 8, to be honest with you. You had tiebreaker stew going on in the AFC in the final week. You had 4 teams in it, and there wasn't even a clear case of one team wins and they're in. Even the teams that won still needed help with that. So you can have interesting playoff races. In the NFC, it obviously wouldn't have mattered because Arizona would have been the last wildcard team no matter what. But you still had the intrigue with the 2 division championship games in week 17. So you wouldn't have lost any of the excitement of the playoff race by having an additional team in. It would have been 2 of the 4 AFC teams that would have made it, as opposed to 1. It still would have been intrigue, and you still would have had the 2 division championship games in the NFC. So if they want to go to a 7-team in each conference playoff format, sign me up. I'm down with that. But the extra point thing, they're spitballing with this, and I think that's an appropriate term, spitballing. What they want to do is they want to turn football into golf. And here's how they want to do that. A touchdown is worth 6 points. You can kick an extra point for 1 extra point, or you can run a play from the 2-yard line or the 2.5-yard line, depending on where the hash is, for 2 points. They're extra points. What Roger Goodell wants to do is automatically make a touchdown worth 7 points. The team then would have the option. This is optional. You could, if after you get your 7 points, if you wanted an 8th point, you have to run a play what we now know as a two-point conversion. If you don't get it, this is Roger Goodell's direct quote, if you fail, you go back to six. It is possible to score a touchdown and then putt for a bogey and you lose a point by trying to get an extra point. Nobody would try this. Unless you're down by eight, nobody would go for the optional extra point. Nobody. It is the dumbest thing. And I've heard some stupid things in my life. I've said some stupid things in my life. But this is probably the stupidest thing I've ever heard. This is dumber than the NBA wanting to expand to Europe. You can't get free agents to sign in Utah or Milwaukee, but they're going to go to Barcelona? Steve Francis wouldn't go to Vancouver when he got drafted by the Grizzlies when they were in Vancouver. One of the most beautiful cities you'll ever see, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. They couldn't make basketball work there, but they're going to put a team in London or Paris or Spain? No, this is even dumber. There's never been a time in football when you can have points that you have actually earned taken away from you. Well, unless there's a penalty, you can take points. You can voluntarily take points off the board. If you kick a field goal, but there's a penalty on the field goal, you can take the points off the board and keep the ball and keep driving. But the league would actually deduct points from this would be like a bogey in golf. And this is terrible. The reason why that Roger Goodell wants to get rid of the extra point is because it is too easy. God forbid we see success. We're paying hard-earned money to see people perform well at something. I don't understand the obsession with failure. I don't understand the obsession with people that want to see failure. It's kind of like in movie trailers, how they show the outtakes. I've never been one to want to see the outtakes. I don't want to see how the sausage is made. I don't want to see Dom DeLuise flubbing his lines 10 times in Cannonball Run. I just want to see the movie. I don't need to see outtakes. I don't get off on seeing people fail at things. If I want to see people fail at things, I'll just videotape my life, pretty much. I'll go down to a casino and place a couple of bets. If I want to see myself fail, I'll videotape me placing a couple of bets. Because put money on the Warriors last night. That didn't go well. If kicking's really too easy, there's one thing Roger Goodell should do before anything else. He should take off his hypocrite pants and get rid of the K-ball. Remember the K-ball? They had to come up with a separate football for kicking. Because God forbid they use the same footballs that the regular players use. Have to have a special kicking football. They did that to enhance the kicking game, to add more points to the game. Remember that? Everything's offense-centric. They have to add points. So get rid of the K-ball. There's probably a K-ball factory in Indonesia that's going to lose, you know, jobs if they do that. But still, get rid of the K-ball. Field goals are too easy, too. So make them just use the regular beat-up, worn-down, game-used footballs. Actually, make them use the worst football. Flatten the football out. Take a little bit of air out of the footballs. Keep the K-ball, but take a little bit of air out of the K-ball. Just enough. Like, you know how the Harlem Globetrotters, they take just enough air out of the basketball to where they can make the shots easier, to where they don't get these really long, ridiculous rebounds if they miss? Just do that with the K-ball. Take some of the air out of the K-ball. See how that works. If you really have to change the extra point, though, I wouldn't eliminate the extra point. I would tweak the extra point. This is what I would do. And God forbid I've ever watched sports in my life. God forbid I would know anything about football. But here's what you do. You remember the XFL? They had the action point. Kind of take from that. You keep the extra point format as is, but you eliminate the kicking aspect of it. If you want a one-point conversion, the regular extra point would be what is now the two-point conversion. You run a play from the two-yard line. If you want a two-point conversion, then you move the ball back to the five-yard line, or you can make it the seven-yard line or the 10-yard line. You could increase the degree of difficulty however you feel appropriate. But that would make more for more exciting football, I think. It would make sure the special teams guys would be less concussed because they'd be in for less plays. So that way, when the regular players get concussed, the special teams guys, which are the backup linebackers and the backup safeties and the backup wide receivers and the backup running backs, they would all get time during regular gameplay. So let's do that. 1 point from the two, 2 points from the five. We're going to be silly, though. Like, Roger Goodell's being really silly. I came up with some other things in sports. If we're going to use the logic that this is too easy, we should get rid of this. I came up with some other things in sports that are too easy. These are things that should be eliminated or fixed. Sticking with football, the handoff. We should outlaw the handoff. Because what is the success rate of the quarterback handing the ball off to the running back in football, do you think? Is it greater or less than the extra point percentage, which this past year was 99.5%? 0.5% of extra points in the NFL, kicked extra points, were missed. What do you think about handoffs? Success rate higher or lower than 99.5%? Make it to where, well, they're already kind of making it to where it's going to be a passing league anyway. The running games are being phased out. But require that every running play, you have to pitch the ball to the back. No more handoffs. It would eliminate play action as we know it. But you know what? I mean, you got to have some collateral damage, right? Handoffs are just too easy. It's just too easy. We can't have too easy in our league. Basketball, the dunk is way too easy. They'll never get rid of the dunk. Actually, college basketball for a while outlawed the dunk. Back when Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was in college, for about 7 or 8 years, they eliminated the dunk. They made it illegal. It's funny because you remember the Jim Valvano game where North Carolina State won on that last second play? It looks like a dunk, but the dunk was technically illegal that season. So what Lorenzo Charles did was he caught the ball above the rim and just kind of dropped it down into the basket. He didn't actually dunk the ball. Next time you see that play, and trust me, when ESPN does their next Jim Valvano tribute, they'll show that. So watch for that. It's not a dunk because a dunk was illegal at that time. But think about it. Do we really need the dunk? I mean, how exciting is the dunk? Really? I mean, honestly. It's kind of like what fighting is in hockey. It's just a dunk. I mean, I don't get it. But I know a lot of people like it. I'd rather just see a well-orchestrated offense where you're passing and guys are moving around. I'd rather see three-point shots than dunks. I don't know what it is. Maybe because it's harder to do. Which makes, I don't know. I'm just not into it. But the dunk is way too easy. It's the highest percentage shot in basketball. So we obviously got to get rid of that. Fly balls to the outfield. Andrew McCutchen, the National League MVP, was 50th in Major League Baseball last year in fielding percentage. Andrew McCutchen's fielding percentage last year was .982. That's 98.2% of the time Andrew McCutchen successfully fielded the ball. And he was 50th in baseball, which means 49 other outfielders were better than 98.2%. It's too easy to catch balls in the outfield. So my suggestion is when you hit a fly ball to the outfield, we need to come up with a way to distract the outfielder somehow. If the batter wants to run out there and throw his bat at the fielder, or if the home crowd wants to throw things at the outfielder, I think that should be legal. Air horns, vuvuzelas. Let's add to the degree of difficulty catching a fly ball, a can of corn in baseball, because 982 and your 50th best fielder, just too easy. We can't have easy. Penalty kicks in soccer. I think they actually want this to be easy. I don't think they're going to fix this. But it's actually one of the toughest things to do for the goalie. It's one of the most impressive feats in sports when a goalie stops a penalty kick. Soccer really wants to deter you from fouling them inside the penalty area. If you don't watch soccer, you probably watch soccer when the World Cup comes around, but if you don't normally watch soccer, if you get fouled in the penalty area, it's not like in hockey where you have a penalty shot where you get the running start. What it is they set the ball up 12 yards away from the goalie. It's a straight shot. The nets are pretty wide. The goalie cannot move. I mean, he can like hop up and down in place, but he can't really move off his line until the ball is kicked from 12 yards away. And it basically comes down to, do I dive right or do I dive left? And you just have to hope that the ball goes where you're diving. But it's too easy to make a penalty kick in soccer. Thank God Roger Goodell's not the commissioner of MLS. Otherwise, we'd have a big change there. Eliminating the extra point. We're fundamentally changing the game with that. It's nonsense. We can't have any nonsense. Masahiro Tanaka, segueing here. Great pitcher. He's the big name in baseball this year. He's narrowed his list down to 5 teams. We'll talk about where he might end up, where I think he's going to end up, and where his wife wants to go. It's all coming up here in minutes on CBS Sports Radio.
Northern Nevada's new home for sports, 96.1 and 1270.
CBS Sports Radio.
All right, final segment here on the buffet. CBS Sports Radio, 823-1920. It's Notch. How you doing? One final segment, about 7 minutes left. Masahiro Tanaka is a big free agent acquisition. MVP of the Japanese League last year. At least he should have been MVP. 24-0 with a 1.27 ERA for the Rakuten Golden Eagles, who won the Japanese championship. We have a phone call real quick. Hello, it's CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, Notch, what's going on, man?
Hey, not much. How you doing? Thanks for calling.
Yeah, my name is Bob G. I just want to thank you for stepping in for Mike.
Hey, you're welcome.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk to you real quick about Roger Goodell's decision.
Thanks for putting up with me, by the way.
No, hey, you know what? I heard you on Panama, too. It's nice to have you. You know, it's like a breath of fresh air, man.
Well, thanks.
These other guys, you know, you gotta watch out for them. But anyway, I just wanted to... We have something in common, too, by the way. You're a Viking fan?
Yeah.
My son is also.
I feel bad for him.
Well, I go back to Fran Tarkenton days.
But, yeah.
And then
so
I'm a Bills fan. So, you know, we've both gone to the Super Bowl 4 times.
Yeah, I know.
And haven't won one.
I hate this time of year because they're going to show all the Super Bowl highlight montages.
Right.
And I think the possum on the side of the road that's dead has had more glory days than the Vikings have in the Super Bowl.
Plus, too, I'm still thinking about Scott Norwood's, you know, missed field goal.
Oh, yeah, wide right.
Yeah, yeah.
So what do you think about the extra point?
You know what? There's two things. One is it's going to hurt, you know, us bettors. We like to bet on football. It's going to change that a little bit. And then also that 1 point, you know. But what's it going to do to the place kickers? I mean, they're going to have to sit and just wait a little longer for a field goal instead of doing the extra points?
It'll be one thing. It'll be something where no one's happy to see them out there trying to kick a field goal because there's no extra points anymore then.
I mean, it is. When you said it's a stupid idea, you know, I twofold that.
It's one of the dumbest things I've ever heard.
I mean, they're trying to change the game, and I'm saying just keep, you know, I always think, too, of sports. I go back to the Brooklyn Dodger days. I'm from Brooklyn.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just thinking, I'm going, you know, always, you know, Ebbets Field. I used to go to Ebbets Field when I was a kid. But the thing is and if you're going to change anything, you know, it's hard to change them because they built all these stadiums. But I'd like to see all baseball fields the same.
No, that's part of the appeal of baseball is the dimensions being different.
Mm-hmm. But football, you know, just keep the tradition, you know?
Well,
it's just that extra
you can
point.
You can keep the point structure, just change it by having them run a play for the single point.
Oh.
Yeah,
you know,
that's what I was suggesting, instead of just outlawing the whole idea altogether. I appreciate the call. I got to get this Tanaka thing real quick.
Thank you. You bet.
Hey, I'll talk to you later. Thanks. All right, Vikings fans out there and Bills fans too. Nice to know there's other people suffering in the world. But Masahiro Tanaka, who was the best pitcher in the Japanese League last year, and the talent level, if you're not familiar with Japanese baseball, I'm really high on Japanese baseball. I write the MLB Network constantly telling them, put Nippon Professional Baseball, MPB, that's the name of the league, put their games on in the middle of the night because no one else does. And the quality of baseball is actually good enough that it could be considered a third major league. It's actually really, really comparable to a lot of what you see. There's some really talented players in the Japanese League. Tanaka was posted by his team, the Golden Eagles, and he has till Friday to sign with a Major League Baseball team that made him an offer. Otherwise, he has to go back and play in Japan next year. It's very important, though, to remember this. His wife says that there has to be a strong Japanese presence where he plays. And I know from firsthand experience that if you take a job in a city and your wife isn't happy there, she's going to submarine you to the point where you have to move back or you're going to split up or both. So we're going to look at the, we're not going to look at the teams really. We're going to look at the Japanese credentials of the contenders. First up is the parent club of your Reno Aces, the Arizona Diamondbacks. The problem with Phoenix is there's not a strong Japanese presence there, only about 0.2% of the city's population is of Japanese descent, which is a little less than 3,000 people. They do have a Japanese festival next month called the Matsuri, and there's the Japanese Friendship Garden, and they have Benihanas and stuff, but that's about it for that. Other teams in the running, you have the Dodgers, the Yankees, and the Cubs. New York has the largest Japanese-themed supermarket chain in the U.S., but they also have a store in Chicago, which is pretty big, too. So some take note of population breakdowns for Chicago. 0.2% of the population in Chicago is Japanese. That comes out to about 5,500 people. These are potential friends for Tanaka's wife. Got to remember, it's not so much the team. It's not so much the pay. We got to make the wife happy, too. Otherwise, wife no happy, player no happy. New York City, 0.3%. But New York's huge. That's about 25,000 people. L.A. is the best possibility based on what the wife wants, because they have a little Tokyo in L.A. And 0.9% of the population of L.A. is of Japanese descent. That's 38,000 people. But I don't know about the Dodgers. They're already well over $200 million in payroll. They forked over all that money for Kershaw. They're paying him $30 million a year. I don't know if they can afford him. The Cubs and the Yankees are both on record as saying that they'll spend whatever it takes to get Tanaka. Of course, the Cubs have to overpay because they have a creepy Care Bear as a mascot now. But why didn't the Bay Area teams go after him? Here's why the Giants didn't go after him. You're probably thinking he'd be really good fit in the Bay Area. Unfortunately, they don't have an American League team. Well, they do, kind of. But they don't pay for players in the Oakland Athletics organization. The Giants, though, their three highest paid players and four of their top five highest paid players are all starting pitchers. Timmy, Kane, and Zito, each making over $20 million a year. They can't afford to pay another starting pitcher, even though their rotation would just be ungodly. It'd be great if you go to the A's, because, of course, the Bay Area. Big Japanese culture there. It's one of the reasons why I love going to the Bay Area. Why isn't Seattle going after him? Nintendo owns them. The owner of the team is Japanese. If I were a Mariners fan, I'd be cheesed. That's it for the buffet. Thanks for putting up with me. I'll talk to you tomorrow. I'll be in with Panama at noon also on CBS Sports Radio.